Hi, everybody. Welcome to SEND Network's ongoing Training for Trainers resource. Thanks for joining us on our journey to learn together how to make your transformational training even better. We want to encourage and empower you to keep growing in your confidence and competence as a trainer. Now, here are the hosts for today.
Hi, everybody. My name is Rick Duncan. I'm on the SEND Network training team. We are excited today to bring to you another podcast where we're trying to help you grow in your confidence and competence as a trainer. And with me again today, I'm proud to say, happy to say, thrilled to say, is Sam Dula, our host with the most from Charlotte, North Carolina. How you doing, Sam?
Hey, man. No complaints here at all, Bishop Rick. No complaints here at all. Everything is great, man.
Well, I love the fact that you have elevated me to a bishop. That just makes my life better. So thank you for
We're
that.
Just trying to get the rest of the world to see that. You know what I mean? I'm trying to get the masses to get on board with that.
Yeah, so yeah. I don't know if I can get Marianne to call me a bishop or not, but anyway.
You know, some things only come from fasting and praying, but you know, we'll see what happens.
Yeah.
See what God does.
Well, we're excited today to have with us a guest, Darren Patrick. He's a teaching pastor at Seacoast Church, author of multiple books, including Church Planter, The Man, The Message, The Mission. He's the former chaplain to the St. Louis Cardinals. I'm a baseball guy. I love that. He's a former vice president of Acts 29. He planted a dynamic church, The Journey, with several campuses in the St. Louis area. He's got an undergrad degree from Southwest Baptist University, an MDiv from Midwestern, and a DMin from Covenant Theological Seminary. He is married to Amy with three girls and a son. So, Darren, thank you for being on the podcast with us today.
You're welcome, brother. Can you hear me?
We can hear you. You sound great.
Yes, all right, good. I had to leave the meeting and come back and kicked me off, so I'm just making sure. Good.
Oh, wow. Okay.
You did that seamless.
that was quick. We're glad you did
really
that.
It really was.
I had no idea what you just said, but I'm sure it's all true. So, great.
Well, I just gave a little bit of your biographical information, so everybody kind of knows who you are. But I think most of our guys already know who you are. They already know a lot about your story. And we're not going to go into a lot of detail about the recent journey that you've been on, because our listeners can find out what God's done in you and through you and other places, especially the Pastors Collective. That's a new podcast, which I highly, highly recommend. And the one that you released back in April, where you tell your story to Pastor Greg, was just awesome. But can you give our listeners just maybe like a 2-minute version, where you're serving now and kind of how you got there?
Yeah, well, in April of 2016, just because of some patterns of sin in my life and really just kind of a culmination of poor leadership, I was asked to leave the church that I'd founded, the church that my wife and I had, you know, dreamed about, sacrificed for, you know, given our hearts to. And so that was a traumatic experience, but thankfully the elders of the Journey were gracious and kind and generous and allowed us to do a restoration process. And Pastor Greg was one of the pastors on the restoration team, and the first part was 15 months, no ministry, tons of counseling. Greg took over that process for a second year, and in that year he said, hey, why don't you do a year of supervised ministry and come and hang with us at Seacoast? And so I did that, and then that whole process ended in May of 2018, and we're about, you know, 14 months out or 15 months outside of that. Since then, I've served as a teaching pastor. Teaching and leadership development is really what I do there. And then I serve multiple church planting networks like SEND and ARC and Acts 29 and various other denominations, just trying to help church planters and encourage them. And my wife and I also do a lot of training with churches and staffs around emotional health, which really was my downfall. I did not connect emotional health to spiritual maturity. And so out of what we've learned, out of our pain and struggle, we're trying to help other pastors and staffs not have to experience that kind of pain and really learn to grow in their emotional life as well as their spiritual life.
Well, I appreciate that. That's one of the reasons I wanted to ask you to be on the podcast, is because we just need to do a lot better job as trainers helping our planters understand some of the things that you have recently come to understand. This book, Church Planter, it's really good. I highly recommend it. And I think the chapter on idol shattering is actually worth the price of the book. It's really good. But if you wrote Church Planter today, which is a book that could be used and is being used to train church planters, would it be a little bit different? And if so, how would it be different?
Yeah, I think, I wrote that book. I was, a younger man. And I think there's a lot of nonsense. There's some things I would have said differently in some arrogant. So I won't nitpick that. You let the reader understand. They can figure that out. But I would have probably, some of my tone would have been different. But I think also, I think I would have probably put more emphasis on the team than the person. The guys who did the cover for the book, of course, you know, I don't know about you guys. I read a lot of books on Kindle. I don't even know what the cover looks like. So, but back in the day, the cover of the book was everything, right? And so it's this guy sitting out there, you know, with this, you know, this harvest tool in his hand, and he's got a Bible. And so it's the picture of the man, the message, and the mission, because he's going to harvest the, you know, that. So it's beautiful. Like, it's awesome, but it's one guy, right? It's one guy. And I no longer believe that, much like Silicon Valley, very few, money guys, venture capitalists and investors are funding solopreneurs, you know, one, they like funding teams, or at least a couple of people. And I really think that the best way to plant a church is with a team. So I probably would have had more emphasis on the team. There was a cultural moment when that book was written that I think probably still exists, and that we need pastors to be to be godly men. And so that was really the focus. And obviously, as we were starting Acts 29, that was a huge focus of our part. But I would have done more on team. I would have certainly done more on the emotional life of the pastor. And how important that is. In fact, that how that is equal par, really, to just about anything else. And so, a lot of the qualifications and almost all the fruit of the Spirit we see in Ephesians 5 is really connected to our emotional life, as well as our, if you want to call it, our obedience and our submission. Jesus was a man. We focus on his deity, but he was also a man. I believe in the hypostatic union. 100% God, 100% man, but we overemphasize at times his deity to the expense of understanding his humanity. He experienced all of the primary emotions, joy, sadness, fear, anger, disgust, hope, surprise, all of those things. And if he went through all those emotions, we should too. And to our ability to navigate those emotions and actually feel them and move through them, a lot of times determines how long we last in ministry.
Mm. Darren, that is really good, man, because that really does lead to the question I was considering. We spend here at Sin Network within our assessments focusing on spiritual and emotional health, the character of a potential planter, and it's all good. We also cover character in our training, but you've seen, not only have you seen firsthand kind of being on the field as a church planter, but also working with church planters, potential church planters, looking at different ones who are now coming up. What is it about church planting that exposes the character flaws in the lives of a lot of these planters? I mean, that may be a loaded question, but I wanted just to get your take. What do you think about the journey of church planting that really just exposes and kind of puts their flaws out there for the world to see to some degree?
Yeah. Well, I think any kind of leadership period, whether in the church or in the business world, does that, because the more people that are rubbing up against you and near you, you know, they're going to see all your flaws. So, but church planting in particular, I think part of it is because, you know, you don't have a lot of insulation, if you will, between you and the people early on. I mean, you're trying to get a core group, and I mean, you'd love them to be Christians, but if they're upright and bipedal, you'll take them. And you're trying to figure out how to get a team together to launch the church. So you tend to attract really broken people. I mean, honestly, and I don't want to I don't want to slander our own environment and our own ministry, you know, calling, but you kind of got to be messed up to be a part of a church plant when you think about it. I mean, why would you, why would somebody in their right mind go to somebody who's got the church in their mind, no permanent facility, young guy, new marriage, young, I mean, it's just insane, really. So the kind of person that would be attracted to that, you know, and obviously I'm that's tongue in cheek. God calls people to do that, but you don't tend to get the most mature, people to be a part of those early core teams. So then, you know, a church planter doesn't have a lot of support usually other than like his coach or like, you know, when you got a great network, like the Send Network, you've got built in, help there. But, you know, those guys are on the outside. They're not living in the day to day. And so a lot of times you've got people who don't, I'll just say it this way. They don't know how to really love and encourage a planter and his wife. And so they kind of feel alone. And then, you know, you get desperate because you got to launch a church. I was talking to a church planter today about his launch and he's freaked out. He's trying to figure out which date. And, you know, you tend to just kind of get out, you know, over the end of your skis a little bit with your own personal boundaries. And, you know, you feel such pressure to perform. And you just kind of get away from basic gospel truths, and it makes it doubly crazy because then you're preaching this stuff all the time. And then you start noticing incongruencies by what you're preaching versus how you're living, but you got to keep preaching. And so it's very hard to stay intimate with Jesus and plant a church. And I think that, you know, the seeds of some of my own self-destruction, I believe, started in those early stages. Because the other piece of it is I just got exhausted, like, shepherding people. You know, you're hearing the worst things that you've ever heard in your life, the way sin breaks the world and people and marriages and kids. And you're just having to live with that. And it just, so I think all of that, and then that's just on the, if you want to just call the circumstantial side. And on the God side, God's got to get you ready. So he's going to expose every single thing that doesn't look like him, smell like him, and love like him. And so I think those two things make it really an exposing choice for to obey God in that calling.
So you talked earlier about how just doing it as a solo entrepreneur is not the way to go. So what would you say to our trainers about helping that entrepreneurial church planter, type A, high D person who thinks he can take on the world? Don't do this by yourself. How can we help our trainers help that guy? What should we tell him?
Well, I think even backing up, and I mean, I know there's different philosophies and in different cities. It's, you know, like here, I was just meeting with a guy in St. Louis. And by the way, we need church planters in St. Louis. Let me give a plug for St. Louis. In most other medium-sized cities in the United States, you got three or four churches lined up. You know, you guys hear those sirens? I'm in St. Louis. If nobody wants to come here, it's hard. But I just talked to a guy, he does church planting here with the Southern Baptist. And he's like, we're moving our strategy from trying to just to throw some guy out somewhere to trying to get some of these larger churches to send teams and partner. And so it's easy to tell a guy, hey, man, get a team. Don't be by yourself. But what are his options? I mean, we parachuted in here. I didn't have any options like that. I mean, I connected with our associational, our DOM and our, but there were no churches in our area. Nobody was planting in the city of St. Louis. That wasn't cool, hip, and trendy. So sometimes it is what it is. But I would just say, I mean, I like the guys who take longer. Here's what I'll say. I think you can go too fast. I don't know if you can go too slow. Wow. I think people are in such a hurry to plant. And I would say it's worth taking a year and having a team versus going by yourself and going a year early.
Yeah. What do you think about that whole APEST approach to starting? You know, the Ephesians 4:11, what Hirsch is saying, you need to have an apostle on your team, a prophet on your team, and so forth. What would you say to that?
Well, Brad Briscoe and I had a lot of conversations, if you guys know Brad, with you know.
He's on our team. He's definitely in our ear, man.
that's probably a question you would want to ask Brad. But I don't really know how to apply that, frankly. I think that is a paradigm busting concept that I actually am experimenting with it in a local church here in St. Louis. But as far as how you do that in a church planning context, I'm going to leave that to him. I don't really know. I really like it. I just, in a traditional, the way we plant churches, I'm not really sure how to do that. I think that's some good theological, ecclesiological work that we can do. Yeah. But I don't know. I think it's a great idea, just the application of it. I'm not sure. And I really don't know anybody that's, and I'm sure there are, I don't know about, maybe after this podcast, I'll hear of a bunch, but I really don't know of anybody that's really like had success, so to speak, doing that.
Yeah. I'd like to give it a shot. Of course, I'm 66 now. It's like, I don't know, man. Yeah. I'd like to try some stuff like that with a team of people, preferably a lot younger people.
Will say it's really hard to get people after practicing it. It's really hard to get people on board to not the pastor, the pastor teacher model is so baked in to the Western world. It is really hard to break people out of that. And so I think if you can start, you know, like I know if you guys know Hugh Halter, I'm sure you know Hugh. Yeah. Written a ton of books. He's a good friend of mine. He's here in Alton, not about 45 minutes from me, and he's starting a church with all non-Christians. Like his core group is all, he's leading them all to Christ. Well, that's awesome, and it's really slow though. And that, and he started a separate business to do that. So yeah. The pastor teacher model is really hard to escape as far as people like wanting that, and then even if you try to use some of that Ephesians 4 language, it's super difficult. It takes a long time. But I love the experimenters. I mean, we're one of them. We're experimenting. I don't get paid. I'm working. You know, I've got other income. I don't plan to get paid. So I think that kind of commitment is what's probably necessary to truly experiment with that.
So some of our listeners might be thinking, okay, wait a minute. I thought I heard either he was a teaching pastor at Seacoast, and now he's saying he's doing something with like Ephesians 4:11 in St. Louis. What? How's he doing that? How are you doing that?
Yeah, great question. Well, I live in St. Louis, except for about 7 days a month, and then I'm and I travel other places too. But I'm in Charleston about 7 days a month, where I will preach. Help give leadership direction to their staff. It's a very large church. They have 15 campuses, and I do a lot of coaching with key staff there. And then we do a lot of just like the beautiful technology of the podcast. We do a lot of video conferencing and stuff like that. And so, basically, it's a distance staff relationship. And there are seasons that are more intense there, but for the most part, that's what it is. So when I'm here, my family's here, and we're a part of this local experimental church. And so the answer is I'm doing both, but it's a struggle. It's not easy.
I bet.
I can imagine. Yeah, I can imagine. Well, you mentioned earlier, Darren, talking about how you and your wife are now helping planters, connect emotional maturity, and I think that is a fantastic, but I totally think that's one of those missing links that church planters have struggled with for years, and I'm glad that we're now moving in that direction. But if you could train a younger version of yourself, avoid some of the issues, whether it be the connection with emotional health and spiritual maturity, what are some of the ways you would train yourself if you could do it all over again? Whether it's connecting that world or maybe some other world within that's been a part of your journey, what would you tell yourself? Well, how would you train yourself?
Yeah, well, I think this goes to the slow down piece, and I don't know how we could have done it, but growing up a Southern Baptist boy, undergrad from Southwest Baptist University, master's from Midwestern Baptist, and just becoming a Christian in a Southern Baptist church. We didn't have this category called my pastor. and and at least I didn't. And but as I've gotten into different traditions and tribes, you know, the Pentecostals and a lot of the ARC pastors, they have that. And so you have a pastor. And, you know, like I look at Pastor Greg Surratt right now as my pastor. And I wish that I would have had a pastor. And even ideally, I would have served with that pastor. And I came out of a great church that was an associational church plant in Kansas City. But my pastor was a software engineer when he went into and started his church. And he was trying to plant the church, and it wasn't an established situation. And so he, you know, I tend to think of a pastor with a lot of longevity that's older. So I would have had a pastor. I would have had a counselor from the beginning. I would have really slowed down. Now our situation was really unique. I mean, we caught lightning in a bottle in our city. Mm-hmm. And then right then we were the early, you know, in early with the Acts 29 network, right when the internet age was taking off with podcasts, sermons, and, you know, all the, just, it was a unique time in history. I heard one leadership, at a conference, he said, there's only one person with a gas pedal on in your life, and that's you. You're the one that controls how fast. And so I think that Jesus built his church, but we can certainly get out ahead of attracting consumers with different methods and different strategies. And I think that's what happened. I think we grew too fast. I think the multi-site thing, we did that too fast. And you got to know, we didn't start, that was the first days of multi-site. So we planted 8 churches out of our church that were not Journey churches in 14 years. We had 6 locations. So I was committed to church planting, but I would have probably not done the multi-site thing for years, if ever. I would have not grown as fast. I would have, and all you got to do is not start another service. That's it. Pretty simple. You don't have to respond to everybody that wants to come. I would have probably raised up. I would have probably just gone slower. I would have definitely not been allowed myself to travel as an expert when really I didn't know what I was doing, other than what God had done. And I mean, on the stage speaking about church planting, probably had no business writing that book that you guys referenced at that age. I mean, all kinds of stuff, just way too fast, way too quick, and just kind of got caught up in the evangelical industrial complex, which is super dangerous.
Wow. What, define that. I think I know what you mean, but
that's really good.
Evangelical industrial complex. Man, well, that's an indictment, really, but man, you gotta unpack that a little bit more.
It's just the idea that the publishers are not going to say, hey, please stop writing books. They're not, the church planting networks are going to say, hey, please don't plant churches, or hey, just keep your church where it is. Don't grow. The denominational leaders are not going to say, you know what, please don't send us any more potential interns that can plant churches. Please don't do that. Everybody wants more and more and more. And you're rewarded by all the kind of activity that you do. And the conferences are going to keep inviting you. And so it's just very seductive. You know, I'm a rural kid from Southern Illinois, from an abused family, and I'm the first to graduate college in my family. And so you go from that kid to a kid that's speaking in front of, you know, thousands of people. And I mean, it's just, my character couldn't handle it. Maybe I know there's better men than me that can. And I really rejoice with guys that can really handle it. I've gotten close to Craig Rochelle, who was just very faithful to be a friend to me during my whole restoration process. And this guy's got the largest church in the world. They got 125,000 people attending their churches. And I've never met a guy with stronger character in my life. I mean, it's unbelievable. So big is just because you're big and you got influence doesn't mean you're arrogant and doesn't mean you're sucked into the whole thing. But it's a very seductive, and it starts small. It starts with, hey, man, a guy asked me to do a podcast or write an article, or it can just go to your head really quick and you can get caught up in it. And I wish I would have had some people, you know, really a spiritual father and a counselor would have been suffice to kind of check some of that stuff, I think.
You know, I often think about this passage in Proverbs chapter 30, where it says, "Give me neither poverty nor riches. Feed me with the food that is needful for me, lest I be full and deny you and say, 'Who is the Lord?' or be poor and steal and profane the name of my God." I mean, obviously there's financial application to that, but I think there can be church growth application to that too. It's like, Lord, I want to reach
some really people, good, Rick.
But please just let me stay in my lane, you know. I don't need something too big.
Well, and let me just say this. Let me just talk out of both sides of my mouth, it'll sound like. I hate the escalation of faithfulness over fruitfulness.
Yes, totally.
Where we just like, just love Jesus and pastor these 150 people and don't, you know, I saw some guy's Twitter handle the other day. It said, pursuing obscurity. And I'm like, wow. That is the dumbest thing I've ever heard in my life. I think I know what he means. And I think what he means is kind of what I was saying, but I think we're training a generation of pastors to not have a godly ambition to do great things. So
I don't know how you can read John 15 and not come to the conclusion we're supposed to bear fruit, more fruit, much fruit, you know, but at the same time,
I must decrease, he must increase. Right. Well, and I think we got to connect the two fruits, right? We connect the John 15 fruit with the Galatians 5 fruit.
I think that
is the key.
Yes.
And so one group, you know, all the church growth guys focus on John 15, and then all the church health guys focus on Galatians 5, and they prefer one text over the other. Why? I don't know, man. I don't know what your interpretation is of biblical authority and hermeneutics. I don't think we have warrant to do that. I think we have to hold those in tension.
Yeah.
And if you look at church, if you look in the church planning world, even in networks, you'll see one preferring one over the other. And I think one good thing to do is go, which side does my tribe lean? My tribe leads more towards the faithfulness side. I better start listening to some people who are experiencing some fruitfulness. My tribe leads more fruitful. I better get some guys that are more on the faithfulness side. I think that'd just be a wise thing to do and learn from the whole body of Christ.
Oh, that's good. Mm. So good. Thank you.
Really good. Really good.
Well, Darren, you've given us way more time than you should have. But thank you. And again, this is going to go out and hopefully help all of our trainers get better at training the next generation of church planters. And so we really appreciate the time that you spent with us.
Oh, no doubt.
Any last thing that you want to tell all these Southern Baptist dudes around the country that are training the next generation of planters? Anything you want to tell them?
Yeah. Well, number one, thank all of you for your sacrifice and your sleepless nights and your decision to take the phone call when really, you're doing something else, and just the way that you serve men and women on the front lines of ministry. And just know that everything you're doing, the Lord sees, and he's going to reward you at the Bema seat, and it's worth it. And, the church is God's plan A, and he's building the church, and he's not worried. He's encouraged. He's sending laborers into the harvest field. So just know that your work is important, and God has not left you alone, and he's going to continue to give you the resources you need. And, you know, he wants you to be an example of everything you're coaching. And so he's exposing junk in your life. And so be curious about the things that, he's showing you, and have real relationships so that you can actually speak with integrity to these planters, to have real relationships. Don't become a fat, and I don't mean that physically, but a fat, soft, denominational person who just kind of rides the coattails out until retirement. Keep pursuing, keep loving, keep growing. And man, we need you, and you're important. And these young guys, they may act like you may feel old and out of touch. They're absolutely looking at you as a dad, and we need more dads. So keep doing what you're doing and be encouraged.
That's a good word.
Amen.
Well, thanks, Darren. God bless you. And we'll be looking forward to seeing how God's going to continue to use you in the years and decades to come.
Sounds great, brothers.
Thanks for listening today. Our mission at Send Network Training is to equip multiplying leaders with reproducible systems to plant more healthy churches. You can follow us on Twitter at Send Network Trainers or on Facebook at Send Network Church Planter Trainers. You can also find our podcast on iTunes. This podcast was made possible by the Send Network of the North American Mission Board.